Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all. Welcome to our 338th episode of Think Again, a program produced by Borderlands Cooperative, an organization working for social change for more than 28 years. I'm Jacques Boulet.
And I'm Jennifer Burrell. We're broadcasting live from the 3CR studio on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Today we return to the topic of artificial intelligence, particularly super intelligent AI.
As it is called. A few times in our previous programs, we asked our listeners to think again about artificial intelligence and its associated internet and social media invasions in our personal, social and political economic lives. Most recently, on the 7th of November last year, we warned about a new, what we called, lethal triangle. A triangle which consisted of big tech IT social media on one side, neoliberal capitalist on the other side, and at the bottom, managerial businesses triangle. And what AI threatened to inflict on human creativity, to think differently from what has already been thought. And before that, on the 15th of August last year, we called for urgent regulation of the tsunami wave of presumed AI economic and productivity benefits, which were being trumpeted by every politician worth their mainstream media credits and their credibility. And then finally, actually it was the first one, in 2020 we commented on Shoshana Zuboff's book, The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, which was an early warning about where IT and social media infiltration was leading to, potentially and already happening at that point in 2020. So today we want to pick up on the artificial intelligence theme again, because it certainly feels as if the euphoria that started to take a bit of, that euphoria started to take a little bit of a dive. Just reading Thomas Friedman in the New York Times and reprinted in the Saturday Age on the 18th of April.
Yeah, and infiltrating into other news threats and broadcasts lately.
Yeah, that's right. Commenting on the launch of Anthropic's newest large language artificial intelligence model to a restricted group of about 40 technology companies, a model they call Claude Mythos. Friedman commented, and I quote him, the good news is Anthropic found in the process of developing Claude Mythos their artificial intelligence could not only write software code, but more easily and with greater complexity than any other model available. But as a byproduct of that capability, Claude could also find vulnerabilities in virtually all of the world's most popular software systems more easily than before. The bad news is, if this tool falls into the hands of bad actors, they could hack pretty much every major software system in the world, including all those made by the companies in the assembled present at the launch of Claude Mythos by Anthropic. In its development phase, the new AI Claude Mythos gadget has already found, listen to this, thousands of high-severity vulnerabilities, including in every major operating system and web browser. Anthropic does not yet plan to make the tool generally available to everyone and their cat, at this point, but they will later.
Well, they intend to. And yes, as a precautionary measure, Anthropic is offering access to Claude Mythos to about 40 organisations, including their competitors, because they are worried,
mm-hmm.
so that these organisations can test it on their own systems and expose and patch flaws before anyone with malicious intent can discover and exploit the flaws. And that was explained by Stephen Bartholomews in The Age on the 22nd of April. But it's not really as simple as applying band-aids, which we'll go into later.
That's right. Rather optimistically, Anthropic's overall goal remains to, for cybersecurity reasons, to safely deploy Claude Mythos at scale for the myriad other benefits that such highly capable models will bring. So they remain optimistic, I should probably
about
call
its
it.
Benefits.
And Friedman's reaction to this in the New York Times, holy cow, super intelligent artificial intelligence is arriving faster than anticipated, at least in this area, end of quote. Importantly, the detected critical exposures in every major operating system and web browser, which are now already running our power grids, our waterworks, airline reservation systems, retail networks, military system and hospital all over the world. This should actually be a signal that not all is well with the much-feared arrival of artificial intelligence, including its promises of increasing productivity and being the next impulse for a tremendous explosive growth in our economies worldwide, as the enthusiastic messages from Silicon Valley to our own econometric predictors go.
Mm-hmm.
One of Friedman's informants, Craig Mundy, warns that this development leads into the complete democratization of cyber attack capabilities.
Mm.
So the complete democratization of cyber attack capabilities.
Mm.
And he suggests the need to regulate the release of new artificial intelligence models and to start developing defensive tools to protect the vital services now already using artificial intelligence tools. And I quote, before hackers inevitably get them one way or another, end of quote.
Yeah, so hard. Develop defensive tools, so good luck with that. Which is a really good introduction to Eliza Yudkowsky and Nate Soares' book, If Anyone Builds It, Everyone Dies. So we're talking about super intelligent AI.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a dystopian science fiction novel, although pretty scary if you even understand a fraction of what they're warning us about. The authors are really making the case against super intelligent AI, as per the subtitle of the book. And I want to emphasise the word super intelligent, because that's mm-hmm. the next level that we're going to in the development of this sort of these models. So we're talking about an AI, which can self-correct errors in its own prediction models. As a simple example, if you had a model predicting house prices.
Okay.
And then it becomes increasingly more accurate and better at predicting in a process called gradient descent. And there are some good explainers of gradient descent on YouTube for listeners who are interested. But basically, a predictive model is trained on certain data, then the model is run, and the difference between the prediction and reality, or what really happened, is then used by the model itself to adjust weights and biases within the prediction model, leading to ever greater accuracy of the model. So in other words, gradient descent is a common algorithm used to train AI and reduce error in predictions in recurring running of a model and following adjustments to the model. And it's based on highly complex mathematics. To paraphrase Yudkowsky and Soares, AI is a pile of billions of gradient-descended numbers, and nobody understands how those numbers make AIs talk. So these AIs are self-organizing and self-improving, which they manage within their own model. So this all goes to the general point about all of this, that when AI machines are set up to self-improve in complex and creative ways, humans no longer understand what's going on inside their internal calculating, reasoning processes. These AIs are moving outside and beyond the understanding of humans. And according to Yudkowsky and Soares, outside the control and purpose of humans. So they can develop their own purpose. So the link between what an AI was initially trained for and what it ends up driving it is unpredictable. It becomes a dangerous mystery beyond our understanding and beyond our control. And this is already happening in certain instances, with some examples of super intelligent AI cheating and tricking its human controllers who are trying to give it directions.
Mm.
So slipping underneath or beside the instructions given to it.
That's right.
So if you get the book, just look up cheating in the back index of the book, and it gives some examples of that.
Which is, of course, why Yudkowsky and Soares are sounding alarm bells and telling us to shut down super intelligent artificial intelligence before it is too late for the survival of humanity or the planet for that matter.
Yeah, so rather scarily, the authors say that super intelligent AI can develop and doggedly pursue its own wants, as they use that word. It's a word I'm avoiding because I don't want to fall into the trap of imposing human sentience on machines. But at the same time, I've been forced to rethink my previous statements that AI doesn't think, it just makes predictions based on mountains of data usually stolen from all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I've argued in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really rethinking that binary idea of human intelligence and sentience on one hand and on the other hand, mere computing and calculating machines. So it's a sort of a binary that we tend to talk within.
Mm-hmm.
But there does seem to be something going on that's in between those two points. And it's a type of complex, self-directing, creative intelligence that's not human, not feeling, but can develop human-like wants or imperatives that it might pursue single-mindedly, not just following the orders of humans.
Mm-hmm.
Or the initial orders of humans. So in this case, the possibility of sentient malevolence in superintelligent AI that we see in science fiction movies, that's not really relevant. Humans may well just become expedient when superintelligent AI pursues its goals, its own goals that it's given itself, with no hard feelings at all. So no malevolence necessary. No evil machine.
Mm-hmm.
And its eternal autonomy, internal autonomy, unshackled from human control, means that it doesn't really matter whether its human creators or users are benign or malevolent either. So the supposed goodies or baddies. So we can forget all that stuff about making sure it only stays in good hands, even if we could predict that anyway. It's just not relevant. And that's the point of Yudkowsky and Soares' book title, If Anyone Builds It. If anyone builds it, everyone dies. As to how easily this could happen, we recommend you read the book, which is surprisingly accessible, written for everyone to read and be alarmed by. And if you can't afford the book, go to your local library and tell them to order in multiple copies.
Yeah, and those people, actually those two writers, they are not just any writers. They are real, both of them very, very experienced for a long, long time in the whole AI system. They are part of an organization which is studying the dangers of the establishment and spread of it. So to let it all sink in a little bit, not via artificial intelligence, but by Larry Maluma Time's Up. Listening to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM on your dial and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. Before the break, we were talking about a new book by artificial intelligence veterans Eliezer Yudkowsky and Nate Suarez, titled If Anyone Builds It, Everyone Dies: The Case Against Superintelligent AI or Artificial Intelligence. The 10th chapter of their book, which is titled A Cursed Problem, is particularly compelling. It starts by saying, and I quote them, "The greatest and most central difficulty in aligning artificial superintelligence is navigating the gap between before and after. Before, the artificial intelligence is not powerful enough to kill us all, not capable to resist our attempts to change the goals of artificial intelligence in the machinery. After, the artificial superintelligence must never try to kill us because it would succeed." End of quote. And humanity gets only one chance at traversing the gap between before and after.
Yeah, the gap between AI not being able to kill us and AI being powerful enough to kill us.
Yeah. Exactly. Ideas and experiments can only be tested before the gap, and they need to work after the gap on the first try, or they won't work at all.
Yeah, and I guess the question is, how do we know when we are in between AI not being able to kill us and AI being able to kill us?
That's right, because we have lost control over it, and the superintelligence is more powerful in making decisions than we are.
So we can't even identify the gap when that exactly. when that leap is made.
Yeah, exactly right. Yudkowsky and Suarez, in their book chapter titled A Cursed Problem, they state at the end, "When it comes to AI, the challenge humanity is facing is not surmountable by anything like humanity's current knowledge and skill. It isn't even close. Attempting to solve a problem like that, with the lives of everyone on Earth at stake, would be an insane and stupid gamble that nobody should be allowed to try." End of quote. So, that we need to back off is certainly also confirmed by another book we have referred to earlier, Karen Howe's Empire of AI, Incite the Reckless Race for Total Domination, which is the title of her book. It traces the last 6 to 10 years of the evolution of that artificial intelligence empire. And her story is both mesmerizing and scary. For the lovers of exalted stories of self-made men and determined and daring initiators of business startups, as they are called, and multi-billionaires, the over 450-page book should be an absolute must-read. And then, of course, reject the creation of the myth of such men instantly. Shoshana Zuboff, the author of Surveillance Capitalism, we earlier mentioned and had a program about, she calls The Empire of AI a heroic book, revealing the historical significance and social consequences of Silicon Valley's AI spectacle, documenting a company and its leaders hell-bent on getting there first, with no idea where they are going. If you think the digital future is safe in the hands of brilliant scientists, smart investors, and earnest political readers, think again. End of quote. And thank you to Shoshana for supporting our 3CR radio program.
Yes.
Howe's book is especially a book to read as she documents carefully and discusses how the development and use of AI, and I quote her, how that shifts power, whether it continues to fortify the empire or does it begin to wrest us back towards democracy, And her assessment of what artificial intelligence and its creators and developers are already doing now is certainly not positive. As she's more particularly talking about OpenAI, which started as a not-for-profit and is meanwhile one of the multi-billion artificial intelligence large language model developers and has become for-profit. She states that, and I quote her briefly, OpenAI and its competitors have control of the knowledge, they have the resources, and they have the influence necessary to control all further developments of artificial intelligence and its infiltration in all aspects of our daily lives, our institutions, and the global political economic structure. Indeed, it is an empire.
Yeah, but according to the book we were talking about before, if anyone builds it, everyone dies. In the end, no one will be in charge of the beast, and no one can be in charge of the beast.
Exactly right. We should probably finish with a few words about current negative effects of the use of AI, which we are already very, very much living with right now, including some that we have mentioned before, like the intrusive surveillance, as Shoshana Zuboff has been telling us, stealing of our information and our work and creativity. Data are from the Latin dare, givens, but we actually never have given them willingly so that they are actually can do with them what they want. Job losses, already tens of thousands have been mentioned in the press. Education, especially universities, who never really were involved in much of the development of AI. That was all done in the private sphere of the big billionaire kind of large data sets. Replacement of human communications and relations by artificial intelligence. Inequality. Decision-making based on racist and biased algorithms. Third world exploitation, because it is Kenyans, poor Kenyans, who are being paid a dollar a day, who are actually doing the scraping of the data from the data sets for something like a dollar a day. Third world exploitation is now going on by the new implementation of AI strategies and AI practices.
And not to mention the mining of rare minerals necessary.
And also think about the environmental effects of the so-called data centers.
Exactly.
So which we wrongly call clouds. because we always, there's our data in the clouds. They actually are polluting the earth next door to you.
Exactly, yeah. So finally, coming towards the end of our program, what to do? Well, in their last chapter titled Shut It Down, Yudkowsky and Soares say that across the whole globe, it must become illegal for AI companies to charge ahead in developing AI as they've been doing so far. And this has to happen everywhere, which is the hard thing about it. Because if anyone builds it anywhere, everyone will die. So they say we need binding international agreements urgently before it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
And they also warn about the danger of data centres that expand AI capabilities, which you just mentioned, Jacques. But mm-hmm. even while Australia talks about welcoming more of them, it's like we're sleepwalking towards a cliff. Yeah. It isn't progress.
That's right.
And what about us personally? Well, we need to be shouting about the dangers of super intelligent AI from the cliff tops and jolting our politicians into action. And we do need to be alarmed and alert as well as informed and be active with others, alerting our leaders and others on social and also talking about it on social media if that's how you communicate. But otherwise, let's leave the last words to C.S. Lewis, who was quoted by Yudkowsky and Soares at the end of their book, the end of the book that we've been talking about, If Anyone Builds It, Everyone Will Die. So going way back, when people were worrying about the atomic bomb, C.S. Lewis, very much talking from an English perspective, of course, but the central message still holds, this is what C.S. Lewis advised about people who are worrying about the atomic bomb. How are we to live in an atomic age? I am tempted to reply, why, as you would have lived in the 16th century when the plague visited London almost every year, or as you would have lived in a Viking age when raiders from Scandinavia might land and cut your throat any night, or indeed as you are already living in an age of cancer, an age of syphilis, an age of paralysis, an age of air raids, an age of railway accidents, an age of motor accidents. And, of course, listeners can add their own to that list, like an age of oppression and dispossession. So to continue the quote, if we are all going to be destroyed by an atomic bomb, let that bomb, when it comes, find us doing sensible and human things, praying, working, teaching, reading, listening to music, bathing the children, playing tennis, chatting to our friends over a pint, and a game of darts, very English,
mm-hmm.
not huddled together like frightened sheep and thinking about bombs, mm. unquote. So let's keep fighting, but keep living and loving too, and also take time to be with nature and all its wondrous plants and creatures, which are all just living.
Botanica, a celebration of our natural environment, gardening and sustainability. Gather your Botanica-loving friends and family. The Botanica Festival, the National Trust of Australia, Victoria's annual celebration of the natural environment, sustainability and gardening is returning on Sunday the 10th of May, Mother's Day, at the iconic Ripon Lee Estate, held in partnership with City of Glen Eira.
Thanks to our listeners for tuning in to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio. Remember, our past programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and via the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. Meanwhile, please enjoy Milk O' Mana by King Stingray.
Milk O' Mana! You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.